Right, welcome to episode 3 of In the Stiffs podcast. Today we're going to be talking about football managers. When I do my preparation, which I do intensively, I realise I've had so many football managers. Dave, how many have you had?
I've just been adding them up a minute ago, and I've had 23, which sounds incredible when I've been playing for 19 years.
23 football managers.
I've probably got a lot of them the sack looking at that list as well.
Well, Gary Neville, I think, had one football manager, and I was listening to him the other day and came with an amazing amount of success. So if we're looking at having one manager and being successful and never getting sacked, you having 23 managers, Dave, is probably...
19 club managers.
Someone's
got
to backtracking now.
Gav, what about you? How many managers you had?
I've got significant managers. So I've got here 10 significant managers that I've made notes of.
What do you mean? So you've got some insignificant. That's quite damning.
Well, I think so, because obviously... And not necessarily detrimental in terms of talking about them. It's the fact they might have just been in for a few games. You know, I had a guy called Andy King who signed me on the Tuesday. We got beat on the Tuesday night, and when I came in for training on the Thursday, he was gone. So I've not really put him down. I think that goes down as me getting him the sack. But yeah, so it's those ones I've just left out. It's significant ones who I think have had a bit of an effect and have left something with me moving forward.
So what we can do is we can talk about our managers, then at the end we'll come up with who our best managers are for key areas: tactical knowledge, man management, leadership style, and inspirational.
Yeah,
are we happy with that?
Brilliant.
There's a little bit of format.
Yeah.
Episode 3, isn't it? It's planned. It's getting really slick now, aren't we?
Smooth.
Dave, do you want to start us off with your... We're not going to go all through Gary Peters, are we? Because we had that first episode.
Yeah. We've had enough of Gow, haven't we?
Do you want to start us off, Dave? Who did you go through? Rattle through your early ones if they're not very interesting.
So at Shrewsbury, when I was first there, it was Kevin Ratcliffe, and he was in charge.
Yeah.
And then I actually made my debut under, I haven't put him on the list, but Mark Atkins. Remember, he took over the last game of the season when we'd been relegated?
Right, yeah.
That's when I made my debut. And then it was the following season, my first real stint in the team was Jimmy Quinn and Dave Cook.
Mark Atkins, was he used to play for Birmingham?
Blackburn, wasn't he? Won the Premier with Blackburn.
Oh, is that one? Yeah, so I'm thinking of a different one. Yeah,
he like class acting. Yeah, yeah.
What player he was, by the way. Versatile, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Remember, he could play midfield, centre-half.
Jimmy Quinn started... I didn't start the season. I remember I was with the youth team, and then as the season went on, I got into the team. But right from the outset, you kind of... You'll know this, Sam. There's a lot of funny times. There wasn't a lot of preparation going into the sessions.
Well, you say that. We used to train 3 times a day. We were swimming. If you don't really remember that, we used to swim at 7 o'clock in the morning, the Shrewsbury Baths, in pre-season. We'd swim in at 7 o'clock, then we'd train at 10:30, then we'd do an afternoon session at 1. I remember doing that. So we're in the swimming baths at 7 o'clock every morning.
Do you remember, Dave? Sorry to bring up GP again, but do you remember when GP, and what Gary used to do, he would see someone do something and then introduce it for a number of days or weeks, and then that fad would pass by. And then the next one would come in, like we were talking about Leo Fortune West, how it was like, we're going to play football all week, and then we get Leo in the next week and go back to front. Do you remember after games and that, when we were actually after the game, the minibus would be outside the ground, and then he was driving to the Quarry Baths, like you say, and then we'd have to swim and cool down. And we did that for about 4 weeks, and all the lads were like going, how long is this going to last? Do you know what I mean? But it was absolute ball ache. You finished the game, but obviously, like, he was trying to get the edge and trying to be revolutionary.
It's quite forward thinking. We used to have every time, because we did it pre-season, every time we had a new lad, we used to say, it's at the end of the session, or we do the breath test, you know, where you have to go under the water and see how long you can hold your breath. Yeah. So it must have been about 15 lads. So all like, we'd say, right, you know, when we say go, you go under, this be the end of the session, you go under the water, and you go in. Obviously, when the lad went under, we would all just walk out. Like, he'd come up after like 1:30, and then he'd come up, lads, and we're just gone.
Classics.
In the middle of the quarry swimming baths.
Yeah. No one around. Go on, Dave, sorry.
When I talk about being organised, I've just got a memory, one of my first memories of, so it was, Jimmy Quinn was the manager, Dave Cook was assistant, and then Chick Bates was kind of first team coach as well, wasn't it? And I remember a pre-season session, and this might have been his second year, because remember Jody Banham, he didn't come straight away, did he, under Jimmy? So Jody Banham was there, and I remember...
Jody Banham, the best five-a-side player
ever
in the world.
In the world.
On 11-a-side pitch, he was just like a rock. Didn't move, but on came at my stag do, Gav, didn't you?
Oh, mate, it was brilliant.
And we had sorry, Dave, but I was interrupting you. I said I wouldn't interrupt, I've just done it. We went to Magaluf on my stag do, and we ended up playing a match, didn't we?
On the beach, yeah.
I was wearing like that barat thing and everything.
Yeah.
Geordie Barat was unbelievable. The rest of us were terrible. Geordie Bannum was dribbling past everyone. Everyone was like, who's he? He was the best five-a-side player.
Mate, he was like Maradona.
He had the best debut ever, didn't he? Do you remember he came on after like 60 minutes, scored a couple of goals and won the game, didn't we? What?
Mike, was it against 11 side on a full-size pitch?
It was only half an hour, though.
Mate, he was. I always remember that game on the beach and there was people walking past. And obviously, we were all had a few beers or whatever. You can imagine, it was, everyone's not trying to tackle him, trying to two-foot him at the waist. But he just kept evading isn't everyone, didn't he? And then people are walking past, and he was that good. People were stopping, first of all, laughing at us lot, all like basically rugby tackling each other on this beach. But Joey was just a joke.
Yeah.
We actually got there after, even though we were intoxicated, had a right few beers, and we all stood there and actually went, fair play, Joe. Yeah. That was unbelievable.
Got back in the ball, like, round of applause for Joey Bannum, everybody.
He was just the whole, just lapping it up the rest of the...
Anyway, sorry, Dave. I mean, Gav said wouldn't interrupt, but we've just both done it.
Yeah, so it's a pre-season session. So it must have been Jimmy Quinn's second pre-season, I thought, because Jody Bannum was there. And we organised the bleep test. So Cookie was out there, marking out, pacing out. There wasn't a real tape measure. It's supposed to be 20 metres long, and he's there pacing out. We're all at the start. I'm ready to go. And I was like, right, where's the tape to put the beeps on? Cookie's looking around, panicking. We need an extension lead. Went looking around the whole training ground to find an extension lead. Couldn't get one. So in the end, Jody Bannum had to bring his A3 onto the pitch, put the tape in the car, and turn it on full whack.
That was Dave Cook's assistant manager. Like, preparation was awful. One, he's a brilliant bloke.
And we went and did, I remember, and then after that, we went and did some sprints. And the sprints were not far at all, maybe 10 or 15 metres. And Cookie's there with a clipboard, taking all the timings. I'll run through it, go like 5.2. Someone else runs through 4.9. Someone walks over, he's got his Rolex on, and it's just ticking around.
He's just making it up, wasn't he? He's like, Sam, 6.2, that's a bit slow. I'm like, what? You're joking.
Sign of a good coach, finger on your feet.
The all-time classic with Dave Cook, assistant manager, was, remember Dave Walton? Dave Walton was a big centre-off, and he hadn't been involved, lad. He hadn't been involved for like 6 weeks or something like that.
Well,
he
hadn't.
Yeah.
But he was a big name at that point.
He was a big name, and he was like fuming every week, just getting left out, not even sub-like. So Dave Cook's like winked at me. Watch this, lads. Watch this. Winked at me. You know. So you knew straight away. I was like, lads. Yeah. You know, this isn't going to go well. And he's gone, Wally, you're involved today, mate. Wally's gone, all right, yeah. He went, yep, you're doing the half-time draw. Dave Walton's trying to fight him, get all that drum. Wally, settle down, mate, settle down. He's going to kill him. And Cookie's just walking off, laughing his head off. Going, Cookie, you
can't
say that.
It's the last thing you'd want to say to Wally at that time.
His last confidence is going through the floor.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, I can't imagine Wally taking that well.
He didn't take it very well at all.
Yeah, but that was it for me at Shrewsbury. Then obviously Gary Peters, and we spoke about Gary Peters quite a lot of me already.
Have we contacted him yet?
He had a full podcast for himself, yeah. Gary Peters.
Have we contacted him yet? Have to touch base with him.
You mentioned about not being very good tactically, so I think he's in the hub for you, so I think I better initiate that contact.
But it would be brilliant to get him on, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Because
some of these stories we're talking about, like saying playing football all week, talking about, you know, trying to emulate Brazil and then getting Leo in the next. I'd love to know what the mindset, because we didn't really know, did we?
No.
And he was quite closed off, GP, wasn't he?
When you went through some of those points before about the best manager in certain areas, he'd still be right up there in a few of them for me in terms of that era.
I absolutely have to say that every time I talk about him, people, a Shrewsbury supporter spoke to me recently and said about, you know, that volatile relationship I had with him, which undoubtedly was the case. But I look back now and I've definitely got parts of my character and the way I go about my day with my family, with my business or whatever it is I'm doing in life. And he has had a direct effect on that, from dedication, work rate, self-awareness, ruthless with all of it. And actually got to the point where at that time couldn't really understand him. And you look back now and think, flipping heck, that, you know, what a person to have in your life for those qualities. He was very, very good at that, wasn't he?
You still slagged off tactically, though, didn't you?
Tactically. There, but well, when he said to me his greatest achievement in football was kicking it over the stand at Stamford Bridge, I switched off a bit, to be honest.
What I'll do is I'll rattle through every single manager and then you can take it on to Gav, because we'd be here for hours
talking about.
Right, so I went through Kevin Ratcliffe, Jimmy Quinn, Gary Peters, then I moved to Luton, Kevin Blackwell. Then I went to Wolves, Mick McCarthy. Then I had a lot at Wolves. So Mick McCarthy, Terry Connor, Stoller Solbakken.
Dean
Stoller Solbakken.
Never heard of him.
He's got
a big reputation, yeah.
Has he?
He's manager right in, he's at Copenhagen, I think, at the moment. So he's good stage. Never worked for him at Wolves, though. he came in and tried to really play European style of football, and all the South Bank awards when she was press and attack. Yeah. And he was like, don't go, like, sit off, sit in your shape.
Oh, attack.
Exactly. So it didn't quite work out for him. But so he only lasted 6 months, and then Dean Saunders come in. It was a bit of a disaster under Dino, but he was a great laugh. You've had Dino.
You had him, Sam, didn't you?
Unbelievable laugh. And then Dino on to, I've got my list, Kenny Jackett came in, did really well. Walter Zenger, do you remember him? Italian goalkeeper.
That is a legend, that, isn't
Walter
it?
Zenger.
I mean, we've spent an episode and a bit talking about Gary Peters. These have been managed by Walter Zenger. Can we get, let's get Walter Zenger on?
Oh, mate, what a guy he is. He lives on the Palm in Dubai. Absolute character. He walked in a pre-season. He got announced our last pre-season game, and he came in at half-time, and he had like a white linen shirt on, unbuttoned down to his waist, rosary beads on, all the bracelets, tattoos all up his arm.
Brilliant. I'd love to have played for him.
And then Paul Lambert came in after him.
What was Paul Lambert like?
Yeah, he was. I loved him. He's one of my favourite managers. He wasn't there long, but I probably played my best football under Paul Lambert. For man management, he was
because he had Roy Keane as his assistant at Villa, didn't he? Is that right? When he was there,
yeah,
I think so. I was always interested.
Paul Lambert did.
Yeah, I'm sure it was him. And I always wondered about that dynamic about how you managed to have Roy Keane as, because Martin O'Neill, I can see having Roy Keane as the national manager, but when you look at Paul Lambert, he had Roy Keane as his number two, and I was always fascinated to want to know what that dynamic was like.
Well, how you manage
his man management, Paul Lambert's, was different class. He would always join in training, and he would stand out on the left wing and he'd give the ball away. He wouldn't be arsed, just not track. If he's on, we'd do Old v Young on a Friday all the time. If he was on your team, it'd be an absolute nightmare. But he was perfect for me, and he made lads who were maybe a little bit not quite as confident as the rest. I always remember Helder Costa. He'd come over from Portugal the year before, and he was doing okay, but not unbelievable. Then Paul Lambert came in, and every day used to tell him, Helder, you're world class. You are world class. And you see Helder just, everything was lifting, and he just all of a sudden became the best player we had for a good year there. And he's gone on. I think he's at Valencia now playing Helder. He's gone on and kicked on. But yeah, so Paul Lambert was brilliant. And then after him, Nuno came in, and obviously massive success. But I was only with Nuno for about 3 months before he wanted to get rid of me.
I spoke to Rob Edwards about Nuno, and obviously he came in with this Portuguese culture, and it was very much like, I'm coming in with all of my staff. And he said he got summoned up to it, to his up to the first team area, up to his office. And he said he went in there, and he said, Gav, it was literally something out of a gangster scene. He said they opened the door, smoke everywhere, coffee machines everywhere. And he said, he said, yeah, he just walked in there. He said, struggling not to cough. He said, but he couldn't catch his breath, that they're all in there just smoking. They're all in there just like espressos and stuff like that. And he just said it was a completely different world. Train at 3 o'clock every day. So, you'll know better.
3 o'clock in the afternoon? Obviously, you play football at 3 o'clock on a Saturday.
Yeah, but more in the pre-season, we train in the morning, train at 10:30, and then he wouldn't want to train the afternoon session too quickly, so it used to be like 5 o'clock the second session, so he'd want everyone to go into hotels and rooms and stuff like that, and then...
For training?
Yeah, so you wouldn't get
that. That went down well with the wife, didn't it?
I know, right? So, all the European lads are used to it. It's just all the British lads. Yeah. Like, what the hell's going on here?
We're normally Wetherspoons by two. What's happening here?
Was it you that told me, Dave, about the coffee machine incident in the changing room at half-time?
No,
wherever they went, Rob Edwards must have told me this. I don't know whether he'll want me telling him. It's brilliant. Basically, they're in the change room at half-time, and Nuno's fuming, lost his head, and Rob was sort of in and around it at that time, just when he'd first come in. You know, he's getting stuck into the lads in his way, in his sort of European way, Portuguese way. But it was quite heated, and a few of the lads are thinking, you know, what's the problem here? But they weren't playing well. And then all of a sudden, he just heard this machine going off in the back. As he's talking, obviously, if he wasn't talking, you'd have been able to hear a pin drop, right? And he's turned around, his assistant is there, because they take their own coffee machine everywhere they go. He's getting a coffee, and Nuno's looked round at him. He's looked at Nuno, and everyone's going, oh, it's going to kick off here. He sort of just shrugged his shoulders, and Nuno shrugged his shoulders back, and he carried on with it.
He didn't speak a word of English, that guy, either.
Oh, right. So obviously, like, you know, to them, having a coffee at half time is like not a problem, is it? But you can imagine it going off in our changing rooms. Like, are you sure?
But he was a class act, Nuno was, like, on the training pitch, and his philosophy, and obviously they had so much success, but you could tell in those first couple months that it was going to be. And then all of a sudden the players started coming to back it up as well. And I had the same situation when he told me I could go, or he said to me, because it was a World Cup year of Wales and I was desperate to still stay in the squads and I wasn't playing at Wolves. He basically called me up to his office and opened the door again. He said, oh, you don't mind, do you? He's got a fag in his head. You don't mind if I'll open the window. He's like, yeah, no, carry on.
Not going to see no, are you?
No. Gaffer, I prefer you didn't, to be honest.
But he said to me, look, you're not going to play at the moment. You're fourth choice midfielder. I'm probably going to bring in another one. If you want to go, you can do. And then I didn't mind that, bit of honesty.
Yeah, no, and of course.
That is all you want, though, isn't it?
Of course.
All you want is just be honest. Just tell me what you think, especially when you're a bit older like you were there. Yeah. I can handle that. Just be honest. Don't mess me about.
In my 3.5 years at Telford, I challenge anyone to come and find a player that will say that I've been dishonest. I genuinely, and of course, with honesty, dependent on the recipient, isn't it? Because, you know, when you're honest with someone, if it's not what they want to hear, that can create bad blood. But ultimately, at least you can stand back and go, right, well, I'm not here to be popular, but I'm here to be respected. And like you say, years later with Gary Peters, and I'm bringing up GP again, I didn't like him at the time. And I assume he didn't like me. You know, we obviously had that. We had a real love-hate. You know, I think he deep down, he did like me and love me. But ultimately then, years later, you walk away in the immediate going, oh, fucking. I look back now and I think, got so much respect for him.
I think players who then go from playing into management and all of a sudden they just switch and they don't become that. Because as a player, all you want is someone to be honest with you. If they don't like you, tell me, I'll go, all those sorts of things. But there's so many lads who just switch straight away, isn't
it? I think Ryan Lowe's done really well because he still remembers what it's a player like. He's got a family and he thinks about that, I think.
And he's young and relevant, isn't he, Lowe?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe. Yeah. His players are probably listening there going, he's not like that. Yeah. I think
did you say Lowe?
Yes.
You would be.
So I left Wolves then after Nuno and I went to Reading, Yapstam.
Yapstam.
Oh, come on, Dave. Oh, come on, Dave. Talk to us about Yap, one of my heroes.
Well, again, Yap will be another one who, when we sort of go through the best, especially tactically, he'll come up, just that Dutch way of playing. But I was in awe. You know, out of all my managers, he's the one I think you were a proper player.
Definitely.
Do you know what I mean?
You were telling me the other day, Dave, about when he just wanted you to play soccer from, like, play out from
regardless.
The back,
and like, I've never been a real technical midfielder, and he had loads of technical players in, and they had a lad, oh, the name of age.
Getting on the edge of the box on the half turn and that.
But he had left the year before, and he was the one person in their team who had a little bit of legs, who would, a bit of physicality. And I think he brought me in to try and replace him a little bit. And yeah, but his tactics were to play from the back at all costs. Not once did he want Vita Minoni, the goalie, to go further than 30 yards of a pass. So I'd be there, stood in my own box of goal kicks.
don't give me it on the half turn on the edge of your own box. Oh, no!
A minute into the game, you got the other team just setting traps, just waiting for you to get it. Let him have it.
Let Edwards have it. Make them give it to Edwards. You're like, oh, no.
You've got to be seen to be wanting the ball
You can't hide. It's criminal if you're in the Yapstam team and you hide. There's no way you can get away with it. So
love that, though. Jokes aside, I love that.
And the tactical stuff, the stuff we went through in training, how we would get a throw in at the right back area, we'd end up out on the left wing in three passes in 5 seconds. You think you can't stop it. And I always remember actually when we would have been in charge, I think it was Walter Zenger. And the year before when Yap had first come into Reading, I remember doing the sort of the analysis before the game and everyone's like, what on earth are they doing? Like, they're just playing this football we've never ever seen before and we couldn't get to grips with it in Molineux. So I was excited to see it. But more than anything is when he joined in training. He was a joke. And I'd expect him to be a headed kick at centre-half because of the way he looked, how brave he was, his reputation. But, oh, my God, he was unbelievable. I said a few weeks ago about him megsing me in the first session in the box. But then we'd go into shape and he'd always be on the opposition. And he would get the ball and he'd want the first 11 to kind of get in position when the opposition have it. So he'd be saying, right, I'm centre-back, I've got the ball, what do we do? Everyone gets in position and then he'll zing a 60-yard ball across the pitch. What happens if I do that? We're thinking...
They won't have anybody who can do that. Yeah. They haven't got Gaffer. A player playing for that. Man City might have, but there's no one that they've got.
Gaffer, that's not them.
The amount of times he'd get the ball at centre-back and he would stop playing, he'd look at me and whoever's my midfield partner, he goes, you think that gap's close enough? You think I can't get through there? And we're like looking at my midfield partner thinking, no, we're signed. And he just...
Gaffer, you can. But this lad I'm playing against Saturday probably won't be able to.
But honestly, he was unbelievable, but he was too good for the championship. Do you know what I mean? He was wanting us to play and play. We started losing games, our confidence was going, and then when you're asking lads to do it when we're losing games, and we were 1 or 2-0 down in the first 10, 15 minutes for like 4 or 5 games on the bounce because teams were just waiting for us to make a little mistake. Yeah. And he just, it wasn't in his mindset to go long, even right at the very end. I think he has one game where he said, right, if they're pressing really high in the man, we'll go long. And after 30 minutes, he just scrapped it completely. Yeah. Hated it. Even though we were having a bit of joy off it, just hated it.
But ultimately, and like, I mean, I'm not going to criticise Yap Stam, but ultimately you've got to have a plan B, haven't you?
Yeah,
you've got to have a plan
B. It's a weakness. If you haven't got the players, you can't play like that. You can't play like Man City if you're Shrewsbury Town and roll it out to people on your 6-yard box because the centre half will give the ball away and you lose games.
And when the pitches are getting a little bit pitches are getting shot in away. But he would
you've got to be adaptable.
Say having a plan B, he would have a plan A, B, C, D, E, but they're all about passing the ball. It was all about rotations and getting someone
you're
else
in,
on the
you're
ball.
You're in analysis and he's like, right lads, we're going to plan B. You're like, oh, thank God for that. And then he's like, so we're going to get the ball out from the 6-yard box.
Gaffer, plan B seems really similar to plan A.
Yeah. And you talk about managers being honest. It's quite a hard one, really, because he can say what he wants. With Yap Stam, you're probably not going to argue, are you?
Exactly. So. And I was before a game, we would go to the training ground before a home game. Or even in the away games in the hotel. And we'd have meetings, but we'd have unit meetings. So there'd be goalkeepers and a defender in a meeting, midfielders in a meeting, and attackers in a meeting.
Yeah.
And he'd stand at the front with a whiteboard. And he used to be so nervous because he'd want one of the players to take the team talk. So he'd be looking at it, he says, right, Dave, up to the front. And I'd have to go up. And he'd say, right, what are we doing off goal kicks? And I've got to move all the counters around on the tactical
Not just
board.
Yours, everybody else.
Everyone else's as well, including the defence and the attack. That. Right, if they get a corner four, what are we doing? And you have to set it all up. So he's making sure that you're constantly paying attention during the shape.
And it is
he
huge,
asks the subs
it?
As well. It'll be the subs sometimes as well to make sure they're switched on. So that was a bit eye-opening, but it's good. He was very, very good.
I'm a massive fan of analysis. My first ever bit of analysis was GP again. Remember when he used to do the DVDs? And I remember you saying that. Like, that's a bit revolutionary at the time, you know, where we're being given videos of the game or DVDs of the game. Do you remember we had that sheet, that tick list?
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd have to go through and tick as well and
give yourself come a rating
back,
out of 10,
yeah,
wasn't it, on each
feedback.
Question.
And he'd look at you, give yourself a 7 there. Yeah. You give yourself a 7. Yeah. Okay. And you'd think, well, do you not think I was a 7 there, Gaffer? And he'd go, I don't know.
But then he would mark them afterwards as well. So he'd say what you think about, then he'd give you back.
Yeah, yeah.
Jimmy Cooney used to show the videos, but that was a game for Dave Cook just to go to and go, watch, here we go, watch Sam Mason, shanked across out of play. Oh, there's one. Watch Luke, there's Luke.
That was for Banner.
3 yards out, he's got it over the bar. Look at
that. That was for Christmas party.
On the Monday, we go,
it wouldn't have been my first bit of analysis, but it was the first time that we were given clear directions from having played a previous game. You know, it was more often we were looking at opposition for the analysis I had, but it was about us looking at our game.
He was saying, I always remember he said it was the best training tool, and it was. When you watch yourself play, you get a completely different view of the space on the pitch and all that sort of stuff.
I think you're unbelievable, and then you look at the DVD.
But it's also hard to watch on a DVD. Well, I don't know what it's like, but we used to watch it just on an old video. So you just like, it was just following the ball, so you couldn't see yourself half the time. If on the left wing, I hadn't touched the ball 50 years.
There's me there, look.
There's number 11 here, Easton. Where's he gone?
Right, getting to the end of my managers now. So after Yap Stam, Paul Clement came in, and again, he was...
Oh, Real Madrid, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was unbelievable. He was Ancelotti's number 2 at Chelsea, Real Madrid. Just as analytical as Yap, but a lot more defensive style manager. Would want you to get into 2 banks of 4, be hard to play through. He was good, but on the other side of management, the man management, he was one of the poorest. Just hated confrontation. So we had about a squad of about 25 at the time. And he wouldn't name the team because he didn't want to upset anyone. So he'd wait till the match day. We'd all be sat in the change rooms at the day ski, 25 people standing around the back everywhere. He would flip over the sheet. This is the team. And he'd walk straight out.
I can't respect that. No chance.
Me
no
way.
On the training pitch, though, he was incredible.
Then any of the lads start getting changed? You know that one, though? Because I had a few managers like that. You just come in, you think, do I start taking my shoes off? You stand there in your pants and you're not on the bench, not even up near the bench.
Oh, I had the worst lesson ever with that. Noel Blake, you remember big Noel Blake?
Yeah, he
absolutely killed me for being got started getting changed. he used to affectionately call me Coconut Head, so he just started shouting Coconut Head, and I thought, what have I done wrong here? And I sat there in my shorts,
ready to go.
I had my shirt.
Give yourself
and tie
a massage
on.
And then your legs from being.
Oh mate,
what take me out, lads?
I was only 70. Absolutely destroyed me. I was devastated. And he was like, right now. Like, get yourself ready. Like, that's you done. And that was it then. Out. out of squad. That was it. Proper lesson. Never do that again. Yeah. No, and then you find yourself being a senior player going, oh, you're playing today, are you? Yeah. All the lads getting this on. Getting ready, are you?
That was a big thing, that. The managers still do that, where they don't name the team until like half one. I had quite a few times managers did that with me.
It used to be hard work, especially being training all week, and all you wanted to know was on the Friday, wasn't it? So you could get a good night's sleep. I wasn't a big fan of it.
It works the other way, though, doesn't it? Because from a manager's perspective, if you name the team, the first 11 know that they're going to be preparing, but you might have a bit of a maverick on the bench or lads who aren't going to be in the squad, and that's it then. And the problem you got is not only you got the lads on the bench that might switch off a little bit, you then got lads who are out of the squad, but you might have illness overnight. You might have a problem where actually between when you name the squad on the Thursday, Friday to the Saturday afternoon, you're actually going to need them. They come in bloodshot eyes.
I think it's more difficult to go lower down the leagues because of the professionals. Yeah. But I think my argument was that if he didn't name the team till the day, and half while I'm sat in the change rooms, in my head I'm thinking I'm starting, and then I'm on the bench, he's lost me then for the game. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? My head's gone. Whereas if you get the disappointment out of the way on the Friday for the lads who aren't playing.
Oh, I
totally agree with naming the team on the Friday.
Yeah, me too.
I was a Sunday, I was only a young kid at Sunday, and it must have been like 1996. Gary Bennett, big tall centre off. And like the lads, didn't they? Back in 1996, you'd go straight in the bar if you weren't playing. You'd have a few beers in the players' bar. Gary Bennett had 4 pints. Someone went down. There was only 2 subs in them days. Gary Bennett had to play. He'd had 4 pints in the bar beforehand. He had his best game, I think.
I was going to say, you got MOM.
Got tired second half.
cramping up.
Great first 30.
Cramping up.
Playing with freedom.
Maybe I'd do the lower league players a bit of a disservice with that, you know, but you always know that you might have in a squad, you know, if you're Conference North or, you know, played more so in the Conference League too, you always add that one that you might leave out the squad thinking, well, you know, he will, like you say, Dave, obviously in the Championship, in the Premier League, lads are going to be, it's their job, their livelihood, it's their everything. It's unlikely they'll do that. But that was always the struggle, you know, even this year away at Darlington, you know, you're naming the team the night before, lads are in a hotel and you're thinking, you know, going to be running up and down the corridors.
So you used to name the team on the day, half one?
Yeah, dependent. Yeah. I used to name it. Just because, again, what you've got to remember is you're training Tuesday, Thursday. You know, do you name
I
it
suppose,
on a...
suppose, yeah.
There's a long time between Thursday and Friday. But what I would do is, obviously, with our prep work in terms of, you know, the shape and the tactical element going into the Saturday, they'd sort of get a good idea, and I try and move it around and try and put players in different positions, but you really want them focusing on the clear messages that you want to give with regards to your game strategy. So it's hard not to give it away on the Thursday anyway, so they sort of had a bit of an idea, and I had to do that. Yeah, you know, full time I would be different, you know, if we were there on a Friday, I would name the team on a Friday.
Well, it wasn't a job interview.
You got any going?
I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? If you're in team shape and stuff as well, isn't it? Because we used to like team shape on a Friday.
Yeah.
If you got left out, you were fuming, weren't you? You have a right go. And you always, the reserves always beat the first team on the Friday.
Yeah, always.
Having a right go. Sorry, Dave, go on.
On last year, the ankles were starting to go at this point. So I went to Jose Gomez, a Portuguese guy, came in for my last little bit at Reading. Went back to Shrewsbury. Sam Ricketts was in charge when I went back. Yeah. And then finished with Steve Cottrell. And that's it.
What do you think of Steve Cottrell, Dave? That's this loaded question there, isn't it?
No, I was always very complimentary about Steve Cottrell. I thought he was very good. And my last little bit with him, he obviously had COVID and was managing from the outside. But in terms of detail and stuff like that, he's a very old school manager, will want to be in charge of everything.
Yeah.
Like you don't get a lot of those sorts of managers now who want to be in charge of what's going on in the cafeteria, what's going on in the gym, what's the recruitment, absolutely every aspect he wants to be in control of. But he is detailing sessions, and that is brilliant.
That's not old school from that point of view then, and the amount of detail he puts in things.
No. So I'd say more of the way he wants to play. The way he wants to play, he's more of a modern day coach. Yeah. He wants to play. It's been a bit more difficult this year for him, I think.
But it's collective management more so, old school.
Yeah,
so Brian Little was very much like that. He used to talk about when he first started with Aston Villa, is like he'd retired early. Obviously, he's a bit of a legend there, and he went in as a youth team manager and then the manager. And he just said, you know, he was doing everything. He was the scout, he was the analysis, he was the manager, he was the coach, he was the recruitment, everything he was doing. And I think he quite enjoyed it. And he sort of said, because you've got a handle on things, then, haven't you? My role at Telford was again me. me doing all of that. But you obviously think,
well, you have to do recruitment,
everything. Yeah, everything. You're coordinating everything, analysis. You know, you're part time, but you're full time really. Like I was practically full time doing it all. But because you want to be the best you can be, and you want to bring everything to it. And then I suppose you always think to yourself, if this is a platform to go higher, which is obviously debatable, but if that does end up being the case, that's a great way to go about it. You know, you're trying to cram everything in. And you're doing everything. Then if you do, having been to Forest Green recently with Rob Edwards and going there for the day and obviously being around them, me and Rob were laughing because he was saying, well, actually, the 10 jobs that you've been doing, I've actually got 9 members of staff here. And he was going through it. And it doesn't mean that, you know, obviously he's got a helping hand and different eyes, and you become a team then, don't you, as opposed to a bit of a one-man band. But yeah, it was so impressive at Forest Green. Flipping heck, like to see Rob and his staff at work.
They've come so far.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, it was real like, you know, the link and the fluidity between the staff was impressive. But that's what you get when you get...
Makes sense, yeah. You get using other people's attributes.
Absolutely.
It does make sense. I think just Steve Cotchell would want it to be, if it goes wrong for whatever reason, he's happy that he's done his part. He doesn't want to blame anyone else. No, it's all good on him. And I think that's more his style.
You say about Nuno, everybody has management teams though, don't they? Like, you know, back in the day, you'd have a couple of coaches, you'd have a manager and an assistant, wouldn't you?
Every time Nuno's team scores, it's flipping like a mosh pit at the front of the technical area, isn't
talking
it?
About, and he said, this score, and there's like 14 of them all jumping up, isn't there? He said, this is funny, Neil Warnock, and he said, I like Nuno, but I can't stand the rest of them.
So that was all my managers. International ones, I had some absolute...
John
Toshack originally.
What a legend.
Great. He was proper old school then. Ridiculously old school. But you couldn't say anything. He's won the Champions League with Real Madrid. You know what I mean?
A different era then. I mean, that was early on, wasn't it?
But it was like, I think it was an international setup and it was a shambles really to what it is now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we were getting up at, so training would be at 10:30. Boys were setting their alarms at 10 o'clock. Running past the kitchen, grabbing a piece of toast and walking to training with a piece of toast. So imagine Harry Kane doing that now, walking down with a crumpet in his mouth. That's what it was like.
Just give a minute, Gaff. I'll do the warm in a minute. It's got peanut butter around on me tooth,
And little things like our evening meals and that, we would have big jugs of Coke on the table, Fanta, whatever you want. You know, he'd have a bottle of red wine on his table. You think it just wouldn't happen now, would it?
Of course not.
And then it went on to Gary Speed, God rest his soul, he was unbelievable. Yeah. Brian Flynn just before Speed as well, then Chris Coleman.
Coleman's supposed to be brilliant, isn't he?
Class, yeah. Again, he's another one who would tick most of the boxes for best manager in Bits and Bobs. Yeah, class.
Always liked him from afar, Chris Coleman. Like, talks well as well, doesn't he?
You just want to play for him. I mean, that's his biggest thing. I think the one thing with Chris Coleman, he, as a motivational manager, he's brilliant, but he's such a good man manager. In the Euros, I played the first game against Slovakia. Joe Ledley was just coming back from injury. I played with Joe Allen. So I thought there's half a chance the second game, Joe Ledley might be brought back in, and it was against England. So obviously I really wanted to play the England game. So Cookies pulled me first thing in the morning, and I think, oh, he's going to give me the curly finger. I'm not going to start. Went into his room, spoke to me. He spoke for about 5 or 10 minutes about how well I'd done, how I'll play a part in the game, all the usual stuff. I'm thinking, like, just shut up. I want to get out of the room. But I walked out the room and thought, he's made the right decision there.
Yeah, great shot. I wouldn't pick me either.
Just Gaffer, just before I go, it's well done there. On that decision, you made the right, call there.
I wouldn't pick me either.
I'm going to give you a good 30 minutes tomorrow. That's what I mean. His man management, he made you just feel wanted all the time. He was dropping me for the big, what would have been probably the biggest game of my life, England in the European Championships. I come out of there thinking, I'll give you the best half an hour when I come on.
But it comes back to it again, doesn't it? Like you say, a bit of honesty.
Yeah,
all right, he might have tickled your belly a little bit, maybe rightly so, but he's giving you a bit of honesty. You come away going, well, you know, fair play. What can you say? That respect, isn't it? Well, from Walter Zenger to Jeff King at Canvey Island. So, you know, you want to play.
It's the same as
go head to head.
Gareth Bale to Andy Brown, isn't it?
Brownie, if you're listening, I know, mate. I know. So I suppose when you two took bore the life out of me with stories of like the Kevin Ratcliffe's and all that, which are obviously hilarious, have me falling about the place. What makes me laugh is it's almost like you could have picked that up and brought it over to Canvey. We had some amazing characters there. We had like the likes of Julian Dix came over for a period of time, and we had like, you might not have heard, but Neil Gregory, who's at Ipswich. We had Danny Potter, we had Jeff King and Junior McDougald and Ollie Burkes and people like that. And all of these lads were just unbelievable characters. I think you basically got a changing room there. And we were full time, obviously. We'd gone full time, we're in the conference, and there'd been a rise. So Canvey Island's like a little island out the back of Essex, close to Southend, and not much going on there. But Jeff King, who was like brilliant, brilliant guy, like great, great character, was just a local guy that just decided to buy the club. I'm going to put myself as manager. And it was basically his championship manager. That's essentially what it was. And yeah, he just had lots of success. And by the time I'd got there, they'd just got this culture in this changing room that the start of training was 45 minutes of just doing a circle. I mean, that was the start of training, but it was such good fun with such high quality that Glenn Pennyfather, who was the assistant at the time, I always remember because I think he's had his hip hop now, but he was at Southend for years and he retired very, very, best player, stood still, best player. We used to do this circle for 45 minutes. I remember when I signed, didn't realise what was going on and we'd done this circle. And they used to do it every 10 passes, you're staying for an extra one. Yeah, me and Ollie Burquist signed at the same time. And we'd gone in there and they just obviously all know what's going to happen. And we were in there for 45 minutes running around, just literally couldn't get the ball. Yeah, but all of them stories that you talk of, yeah, we had exactly the same thing going on there. I had the likes of like Justin Edinburgh. So when I went in with Andy King, who'd signed me, Justin was like, again, God rest his soul. He's he brought me in, and I remember.
Where was he?
So this was at Grays. So I went to Grays. Again, another club that sort of a bit of a sort of smaller club that a lot of heavily, you know, millions of pounds really invested in it, like Canvia.
What year was you at Grays?
Good question.
Before Shrewsbury, that.
No, that was where I went to after Shrewsbury. Yeah, so that was the story, really. That was where GP probably showed
was
me.
Was Michael Keightley there? When
yes,
you there?
No, he just left. Just Michael, left. Yeah, Keightley just left. Yeah, yeah. So there was some big, big players there.
Aaron McLean?
So Macca was there. And I played with Aaron in the England non-league setup. So yeah. Already knew him. Again, it's brilliant, isn't it, when you walk into a changing room. Yeah, yeah. He was a very good player, yeah. So I'd sort of gone from Shrewsbury. And that was where GP had sort of given me that little bit of a door to sort of say, let's sort of get on a little bit. Because he didn't want me to drop down a league. But the deal that was being offered was just, you know, too good to turn down. I went there, played on the Tuesday night, got beat on TV 2-0 at home. Manager got sacked, and then on the Thursday, I'm obviously going flipping out, moving all the way back down from Shropshire, back down to Essex, and that played a big part because it was Essex. I went into Justin, and he went, "Listen, I know what you're going to say, but the reality is, I'm the one who got you here. I'm the one who signed you. It was me that did all the legwork." So I was obviously like so relieved, and I remember walking back there, back to the changing room, and one of the lads was like, "How'd that go?" I was like, "Oh yeah, brilliant!" Like, he just basically reassured me that you know, he did all the legwork. He went, "Oh right." And sort of looked at his face. I went, "What, everything all right?" He went, "Oh, it's just when we signed you, I asked about you," and he said he didn't know you were.
I wanted you here, yeah.
I was like, "Oh, okay." So that's very, very contradictory.
We don't always want honesty from the managers. I'm quite happy to say that you've always liked me.
But I did, obviously, sort of relatively younger. I thought, "I'm not having this then." So straight back in with him asking. He's like, "No, I reassure you." Honestly, I was thinking, I'm a bit debatable. But yeah, so I was at Grays with Justin. Justin was great. Unfortunately for Justin at the time, the chairman was calling a lot of the shots, and Justin was sort of he was definitely looking for a platform for bigger things, which he obviously went on to. So it was hard really to have respect for Justin at that time, because you could see that he wasn't really, him and his assistant Jimmy Dack weren't really calling the shots. So it was hard to sort of make an assumption on him, or, you know, to come up and really critique him, because it wasn't really him doing it. And it was a tough time and all that for the club. And like I say, I went there with all the promises in the world and realised very quickly that those promises weren't what I was promised.
Happens so, a lot in football, doesn't it?
Yeah,
changes
of course.
So quickly.
I was due to either sign for Notts County or Shrewsbury when I left Canvey. And that was due to, you know, certain things going on at the club. And I sort of wanted to make this decision. But Canvey didn't want me going anywhere in the conference or in League Two, which were the clubs that at the time were suitors. So I'd been told that, look, you know, Nuneaton are interested. And I was like, where's Nuneaton? Like, what's that all about? It's like, "Oh yeah, it's in the north." And I was like, "Right, okay." So he's like, "Look, they're not going to play you anyway. Just go there and get games." So I went there sort of last 15 games of the season and just was unbelievable. And that was, the experience was unbelievable, and obviously performed relatively well. And then, yeah, that's when Shrewsbury came in and GP was like trying to muscle up to me at the in the tunnel. So yeah, I had Justin was good. Liam Daish came in at
Coventry centre off.
So again, a little bit with Liam, I was sort of that senior player, and I was out for something like 6 weeks, so he sort of asked me to come in and sort of help him as like assistant, but really hard to get close to him, you know, like that typical, "You're steely, I'm going to make decisions." And then I think he got paranoid with me because results weren't going well, so he got paranoid in the sense that I was quite well respected at the club. obviously been there a few times. They were, when everyone else didn't want me, Nuneaton sort of wanted me, sort of thing. So I was quite well liked there. And I think he got a little bit paranoid about the fact that, like, are you coming for my job here? So I tried to reassure him a few times that, look, like, this isn't, like, the conversation wasn't ever had. And I didn't sort of say, oh, I'm not coming for your job. But I sort of tried to show him that, look, you know, I'm obviously far too young at the moment to be doing this. Yeah. And, yeah, but he came into the club at a really tough time. And a guy that took his place was a guy called Brian Reid, and a Scottish guy come from Scotland. And I think he was good friends with Stephen Pressley, who'd gone into Coventry. So he was going to go in with his staff at Coventry. But actually, Nuneaton was up the road. So that had come up. So they were like, right, what we'll do is we'll get a link between the clubs. And yeah, he just came in and was that. He was Sergeant Major. I always remember the first session. He's come in and he's came over. He's not even introduced himself yet. And we're doing a bit of a circle, waiting for him, thinking. And he's like, right, over you come then, lads. And his broad Scottish accent. We were like, right, yeah, we'll have a little jog over there. And then, but we sort of obviously didn't do it quick enough for his liking. So he screamed at the top of his voice, get over here now. And it was like, and I turned around, it's like, obviously one of the senior players at the time was like, all right, flipping it. All right, Reedy, calm down, mate.
Reedy, yeah. Settle down.
But he went straight into that mode of, I'm going to go in, and, you know, I haven't spoke to him since, but, you know, it'd be interesting to get his take on going in and just being this Sergeant Major type. And
that's fine if that's your character, isn't it? But you can't be someone you're not, can you? Because you will get.
Yeah, I'm not saying he wasn't. I'm just saying it would never have worked with them lads. You know, they're lads who were, we were massively overachieving in the conference, you know, part-time team, overachieving. He didn't need to do it. You know,
nice group anyway. You don't need someone.
What he could have done is befriended the lads a little bit, and not like, listen, not let people just come in and do what they want. You know, of course, there's a time and a place to be that Sergeant Major type. You know, absolutely. But yeah, he just came in straight away. The one I always had, really, my manager who was at Nuneaton, was Kev Wilkin. He was assistant when I went there the first time. He obviously did really well for the club, went on to be Wrexham manager, was good there for a period of time, then didn't work out. And
you mentioned him a lot.
Yeah, when you talk about man management,
yeah,
there won't be many better than him.
When I was first chatting you about him, I thought you must have been seeing him for a bit.
Kev will always be, he's very endearing in the sense that he's a brilliant people person and he's a brilliant man manager. He's one of them lads, he's one of them managers that you never want to let down. Just because of who he is, just because of the person he is. So you, Brian Little, yeah, absolutely, and had that, like you never do the whole, oh yeah, like I'm gonna have a little day off, I'm gonna have a sort of tight calf today. And what he would do is you'd call him and say, Gaffer, listen, sorry to put this on you, but I've got an appointment, or, you know, obviously something really rare. I've got a wedding. It's gonna fall on the Wednesday when we're in training. And he would say, yep, no problem. But you would never take the mick out of him. You could never cross that line with him. Not because he was a Brian Reid Sergeant Major type, purely because he was just a brilliant, brilliant man manager and you never wanted to let him down. And he's obviously done brilliant in recent times with Brackley. And then you've got, I went from Kev Wilkin, my time at Nuneaton, and then Marcus Bignett took me in at Solihull Moors. I went in there as a player coach.
He was very good tactically, wasn't he?
Scary, mate. Yeah, scary. Yeah. There's a lot that I take now into what I do from him. Brilliant coach, brilliant tactically. I suppose one thing Marcus would even say himself at that time, obviously this is probably 5-6 years ago now, so I'm sure he's working with England now. He's a joint manager at Guiseley. He's worked with Aston Villa ladies and Birmingham ladies, so he's probably evolved even then. But at that time, I mean, we won the league comfortably that year. Brilliant year, brilliant promotion, and Marcus was great. I suppose Marcus was great with the players, I would say, with his own staff, like, because I got to see both, obviously being that player coach, with his own staff, it was giving them the freedom to be able to contribute. He was a one-man band, you know, he was doing everything. There's nothing that you weren't doing. And one thing, just jumping onto to Rob Edwards, Rob Edwards was like, unbelievable at that. You know, like, sometimes I would be working with Rob Edwards, who, by the way, I think is an absolute class. I know you've worked with him, Dave.
Yeah, we mentioned before, but he's Forest Green manager now.
Yeah, he's Forest Green. Yeah,
manager of Wolves a little bit for me, like an interim manager.
Absolute class act. And what would happen with Rob is sometimes you'd come out of sessions and feel like you hadn't contributed, because obviously he was on it. He was ready to, you know, he'd got it in his head that he was doing this. And then some weeks I'd come away and think, I felt like I was the manager, because he was so good at obviously elevating you to contribute, and he was so open to ideas, if he respected you, obviously. And I'm really thankful to him for that, because it was brilliant to have, from Marcus, who was great to learn from, but to stand by really and watch him, going on to Rob Edwards was very much being involved and being like, Rob was great at, like, you weren't precious with him. So you could say something to him and give him an idea and he'd go, nah, bollocks, like, not interested.
Yeah.
but he would equally go, brilliant, love that. You know, no ego with him. No. That's a big thing that I love about Rob, is no ego with him. So
I remember with Rob, when he first got the... So he managed Wolves for a little bit, and then the Telford job came up, didn't he? And there was a link between Wolves and Telford. He took that job. I remember I went on Twitter wishing him the best of luck, saying, I know you're going to be a success. And it didn't quite work out of him. And I always remember... He's a Telford fan messaging me saying, like, you were so wrong about this. But I always knew with what I'd seen of him, he was going to be like a top manager. And he's seen that. He went out to the England setups then, didn't he?
Yeah.
And now he's back in the league and doing an unbelievable job at Forest Green.
Yeah. Oh, he's class. He had me in for a day, and I just observed him and his assistant and all of his staff, really. Just brilliant fluidity. And it's funny, like, in my first season at Telford, obviously, there was no expectation of anything. Club was on its backside, and we had an unbelievable season, really, from what was expected and what was asked of us. Was unbelievable. And I remember standing up at the end of the season sort of awards, and I could see on some of the supporters' faces that I was praising Rob and saying how brilliant he'd been, and actually if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have had this season. And one of the supporters spoke to me after. He's like, oh, you know, you need to take the credit and all of that. And I said, let me just tell you now, people say about that year with Rob, about how, oh, yeah, he didn't do very well. If you're going to go on league position, maybe not. But what Rob started to do was he started to turn the cogs of the wheels of professionalism. And if I'd have gone in, like, straight after Rob and Larry, with the greatest respect to them, the job would have been far tougher. Because, again, you've got to start, as you'll know it, you'll know in football clubs, you have to start slowly and build into things, don't you? And what Rob had done is he'd pushed the levels of professionalism so far. And okay, yeah, I get it. But what Rob was working with, and everybody will talk about the Wolves investment and the Wolves link, but ultimately it was him trying to make the best of a really, really tough situation where the doors were going to shut at the club. You know, people don't appreciate that at that time. The club was in massive, massive debt up until the end of my reign, when there was a lot of stuff going off the field where we'd implemented a clear structure and a mentality within the club. But Rob absolutely, he gets a bad rap for that year. Actually, I get it on league position, but from what I was seeing behind the scenes and doing things professionally and training and levels he was going to was just unbelievable. So he was very good. But Brian Little, obviously me and Sam played under Brian, and probably didn't get the best years at the Gaffer. But
so that was at Gainsborough, yeah?
Yeah. But Brian Little, he signed me three times.
Yeah, that was why I was dubious about signing for him, because if you're signing Sam three times, and what are you going into? Do you know what I mean?
You talk about not wanting to let him down. Like, you never want to let Brian Little down. I mean, I did frequently.
Where else?
Frequently, I did. But I always apologised and said, sorry, Gaffer. And he was brilliant, wasn't he?
Where else did you have him then?
Pardon?
Where else did you have Brian Little?
He signed me for Tranmere. Then he signed me for Wrexham. Then he signed me for Gainsborough. And he was, I mean... Some classics for him. They got some proper fallout as well, where, like, because he named the team on a Friday. Obviously, I lost my head if I wasn't picked in that. It's like, not today, Sam. Not today. I don't need it from you today, Sam. He's going to be loads. One time we played Notts Forest away. I was sub, so I was fuming anyway. I was sub. And we're getting beat 1-0. I came on at half time. Then we went down to 10 men. And he subbed me again with 10 minutes to go. Sub the sub. So I was fuming. Absolutely fuming. But I'd go and see him on Monday, first thing on Monday morning. He'd be like, come on in, Sam. Come and have a cup of tea. And I'm like,
you just can't.
A cup of tea's not going to work, Gaffer. I'm like, I'm a little bit disappointed. He was brilliant with players. Remember Theodore Whitmore, Jamaican lad?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was a skillful footballer, but we're playing away somewhere for Tranmere, and it was a horrible game. The tackles were flying in, and he's just pulling out the tackles left, right, and centre. Like, lads are fuming. And Brian Little just subbed him after 25 minutes, and he's just... Theo, it's my fault, Theo. I shouldn't have played you today. Lads, I'm sorry for playing Theo. I shouldn't have picked him. The pitch is muddy, it's freezing. I shouldn't have picked Theo. Well, I go, no. Theo, you can put a tackle in. Yeah. Get your gloves off, get your tights off and get stuck in.
It was everything was about protecting. Like, when we were at Gainsborough, he just used to wrap me in cotton wool, didn't he? Because obviously we were basically, me and Sam used to drive from Shrewsbury to Stoke. And
to
then
meet Brian Little, and Brian Little would drive us up to Gainsborough.
Yeah, he'd have this big Audi given to him by Peter Swan, the chairman. So we just sit in the back there, and obviously I was all trying to do work to build a business. Sam was doing his degree. So, but we didn't really get a lot done because we were just constantly annoying each other and flipping.
So try and get some sleep. We played away somewhere, like 1 o'clock in the morning, wouldn't try and get a bit of sleep. And like, I'd be just falling asleep and Gav would, Sam, 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 Sam. What, Gav? Are you asleep?
Just constantly winding each other
up. Not anymore, Gav. Yeah. No. Brilliant. No, he was brilliant, Brian. He
was class, yeah. And it was hard because obviously, really, he shouldn't have ever been at Gainsborough. Like, Peter Swan was the chairman there, and he had a bit of a vision and wanted to bring the Gaffer in because I think he loved him, didn't he? Was it when he was at Leicester? So Peter Swan was a big Leicester City fan, wasn't he?
Yeah. Huge reputation, Brian Little, though, wasn't
he? Yeah, but he had Villa, massive. Didn't he, when they were the second top?
Yeah.
Like, Gav trying to give it the big in the back of the car. And he's managed like Bosnich and all that, wasn't he? And Andy Townsend stuff. Gav was captain. Gav, am I the best captain you ever had? Not really. You had Andy Townsend. Yeah. Apart from him.
I'm on a second. And I even say to, because I still speak to the gaffer now, and I even say to it, like, I'll sign off my text messages, the second best captain you've ever had. Just because,
you know, I'd go like, Gaffer, am I one of the best players you've had? One of the best attacking players you had? Dwight York, apart from Dwight. He's like, no, Sam, you're probably not me top 50. Yeah. All right, no worries, then, Gaffer.
I remember when I'd gone there at the end of that. That I went on loan, didn't I, from Fleetwood? And obviously Sam was like, come to Gainsborough with me. I was like, no, mate, it's like miles away. And he's like, no, so obviously Sam's in my ear hole, so just grinds me down. I was like, right,
up the road.
I'll do it then. So it's like, obviously 6 hour round trip three times a week. So I was like, right, yeah, okay, come on, bog it, I'll do it. So obviously, yeah, get with Brian. Went there, did well, had a bit of a big impact. So I was in a really good position then when I started negotiating contracts. And obviously, I've just gone, well, if I'm going to travel that far, I'm trying to build a business, I'm doing a degree myself, I'm trying to build my life. So I've just gone big, because I thought, well, I'd had Kidderminster. So Kidderminster was all agreed, all ready to go, brilliant, back in the conference, great. I'd just gone big. And I always remember Brian Little saying to me, he said, I met him at the Swan with Two Necks. Do you know the Swan with Two Necks on the way to Stoke on the back rows of the pub?
Yeah.
And I met him there, and I thought we were going in for lunch. So I just assumed we were going to sit down and we're going to have a glass of wine. And he was like, yeah, jump in the car. So I got there, jumped in the car in the car park. And he went, I've obviously seen the email, what you've requested, bit unrealistic. And I went, Gaffer, listen, I'm not really here to negotiate. It's a little bit of a non-negotiable. Like, if that's what it's going to take for me, taking into account everything in my life. And he just went, Gavin, the last person I signed in a car was David Speedy. He said, if I can sign David Speedy, I think I can sign you. I went, no, Gaffer, no, I get it. I get what you're saying, but obviously it's going to take that. So anyway, we went away. And do you remember, I'd been around yours. I'd been at Sam's for a cup of tea, and I'd gone, oh, I'm going to shoot off now. I've got to go and sign for Kidderminster. And he called you, didn't he? And Sam went, oh, I've just had Gav on the phone. He went, oh, right, yeah, he's off to sign for Kidderminster.
Don't you feel it there?
Brian's then put down the phone. Next thing I know, he's phoned, where are you? I went, oh, I'm on the back roads on the way to, through Bridge North to Kidderminster. He's gone, just pull over for me for a minute. So then I had Peter Swan on the phone, and he went, what's it going to take for you to sign for Gainsborough? Thing is, Mr. Chairman, the question is, what's it going to take? What? How much do you want me to sign for Gainsborough? And that was it then. I ended up signing there for 2 years and flipping. Yeah. Did you sign another year then, Sam?
Yeah, I was like
less money, the budget
had gone. I was like, Gaffer, I said, like, I have had enough, to be honest, Gaffer, because like, I was subbing, that wasn't I playing in that. Yeah. I was like, Gaffer, that's like pointless. I'm playing left wing, I'm not faster than anybody anymore, I'm not stronger than anybody anymore, literally. Like, wait, I wasn't playing left wing, I was like in centre mid, and I was like,
you've gone from you having a go at him at training, and I wasn't like,
I'd gone down from training, so I was only training once a week, wasn't I, at the time. I was training on a Thursday. He's got, stick with me, Sam. Just stick with me. The end of the season. I mean, he just like having me in the car, didn't he?
Yeah.
Stick with me. I was like, oh, go on then. All right.
It was definitely that.
If this was a bit closer, Gaff, I'd be all over it. But then it was after Solihull Moors was my last game. I've come on a sub. I think I'm what the score was. I think we're winning. We might be winning 2-0. I've come on a sub like about 10 minutes to go. I was like 36 or something. I've tried knocking past this right back, and the right back's got the ball and kicked it down the line. And he said something about being an old man, like he was 20 or something, this kid. And I was like, ready for it. Should I just chin this kid? I thought, nah, leave it. It's not worth it. I just went, when I got in the car after, I was like, thanks, Gaffer, for everything. But I said, that's it. I'm done. Like,
he did love that car, because it was him and Gavin Ward, who's the goalkeeper coach at QPR now. He was his assistant. So it was them in the front, me and Sam. And it was like we were two little kids, and they were the two mum and dad. Yeah, we were constantly messing about.
Like, you've done your managers. Oh,
right. I've got a few others, but yeah.
Well, I started off when I was a real kid. Kevin Keegan, unbelievable hero, like infectious on the training ground, was amazing, loved him. But I never spoke to him until he released me. Then that was it. He said,
first conversation.
That was it. So that was like, that killed that. I was only like, I stayed on at school, so I wasn't there YT. Then I had Peter Reid. I mean, Peter Reid was unbelievable, like, win your battles. You know, if you're like, Sam, if you give the ball away again on that wing, come on the pitch and I'll rip your head off. You know, so you talk about like building up these young lads.
You got Brian Little and Peter Reid.
Yeah, it was me and Michael Bridges, you know, the centre forward. So me and him were young lads in the team. And he was like ruthless to us. Bridgie, is there any chance of you getting a hold of the ball and passing it to someone in a red and white shirt? Sorry, Gaffer. We'll try better second half. Like, horrible, ruthless. And we had him pre-season. We had little skill games. I used to hate them skill games to keep you up stuff. I remember being on his team and he was just horrible. Like, I was like 18 at the time. Keep the ball up, Sam. Sorry, Gaffer. We had a head tennis competition.
Getting worse and worse every go.
Head tennis competition. And it was like me and him on the same team. I was like, oh, no. And he was just like on me the whole time. But he was good. But you talk about old school, ridiculously old school he was. That was like come back from Sunderland. That was 1996. That was beers on the back of the bus and everything like that. But great team spirit, nights out. We used to go to Mottram Hall for 5 days. Like, I don't know how, like, I was fine then because I was a kid and I didn't have a wife and families, but it must have been a nightmare for the senior players. Just like, right, next week, lads, we're all going to Manchester. Bring your golf clubs. Bring three going out outfits. We're going to Mottram Hall for 5 days. 10 o'clock bus leaves Tuesday. Like, me and the young lads would be, yes, get in, Gaffer. I think if you had like families, it must have been a disaster. But work, you know, talk about effort and working hard, and like you didn't pull out of a tackle. He was ruthless. So I remember I used to like 2 foot Alex. Remember Alex Ray as well. Yeah. Used to 2 foot Alex Ray in training and everything. He was ruthless. I remember, I don't know if I should tell this story or not. Alex Ray, he was an alcoholic, wasn't he? And he ends up going to the Priory. So Alex Ray was in the Priory for a long time, for like 5 or 6 months. He made his comeback for Sunderland at the Stadium of Light. So he's come on, like, after all this time off.
Maybe don't mention
names. The whole
place
is 42,000 fans, all giving him a standing ovation. I was sub, sat on then. I'm like, you know, good luck, Alex. You know, everybody's going really proud of you, Alex. He's come on, the whole crowds erupted, clapping. Peter Reed's turned off on the bench and he's gone, can't believe that. Get a starting ovation because you can't land your drink. Everybody's gone, not the right message, that, is it? He said a couple of other things, but I can't mention a couple of other things he said because they're outrageous. But yeah, he was old. He was so old school, but brilliant. I loved him.
And there's a lot to be said for that type of management as well, because it's easy to say, isn't it? Oh, yeah, it's old school and it's like, you know, the lack of professionalism. But the reality is, when I've had promotions playing, or if I've played in, you know, great teams, or even if I've just enjoyed playing with that group of lads, it's always come from team spirit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, winning's big, isn't it? Of course, you can't have team spirit and then be losing every week. But like, we've had those lads, like I was saying earlier at Canvey, we just constantly had, we had holiday at the end of every season, we had nights out constantly, and the chairman would put his hand in his pocket. He was brilliant, Jeff King, with that. I think there's a lot to be said for that. If you can get that type of management, along with the type of management of like you say, a Brian Little or a Nuno or someone like that.
You know, it's like,
the extra yard, don't you, in a game for him?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
and you look after, you know, your friends, your mates, you look after each other, you know exactly where you stand, you know what's expected of you. Yeah, so many, Sunderland comes seventh in the Premier League 3 seasons in a row.
Yeah, it's quality. Like,
amazing. I mean, he's...
Because it's easy to sit here, isn't it, and almost talk it down and go, oh, it's old school.
Oh, yeah.
But it definitely has a place. So obviously, Dave, when you're more current and obviously you're talking Championship football, did you still get their moments with the lads? Do you still get those opportunities to have a couple of drinks and a bit of downtime and just to have a...
I'd say the last time really was probably Mick McCarthy. Again, another one who's...
He's probably
old school, but he plays football a little bit more modern. Everyone thinks he's a bit back to front. He comes in to rescue teams from relegation. He's a lot more than that. If he's got a good team, then he'll do one. We had a great set of lads and we were successful. And it all came from that team spirit. Like, we was always good. We had lads all similar ages. We're all sort of like between 21 and 25. Yeah. A lot of lads were going out all the time. He would take us out, silly things, which I used to find a little bit boring, but I look at the value in it now. We'd go paintballing, go-karting, all them sorts of stuff. Yeah. We'd have a night out afterwards as well. And it'd all be organised by the gaffer. And if we're having a bit of a crap time, if we've gone for a bad run of results, be exactly the same. Right, I'll speak to Carl Emery, the captain. All the lads need to get out together. Do you know what I mean? We need to get that buzz back. So he's a more old school.
Yeah.
But I'd say the last probably 10 years of my career. Maybe 7 or 8 years of my career. It'd be the odd night out, a Christmas night out. The season one, but nothing in the season.
I'd be pulling my hair out, though.
And everything, though, it's different, isn't it? It's
honestly
different.
I'd be pulling my hair. I'd be like, I remember Matthew Barnes-Omer come to me like last season, and he's like thinking about having a night out. I was like, brilliant, fantastic. Like, get yourselves a night out. I think it's a great idea. Love that. Should be doing more of it, to be honest. And he was a bit like, I was like, how's it coming along? Like a week or two, like, how's it coming along? He's like, yeah, we've got eight lads confirmed. I'm like, eight lads? Eight. And I had to actually say something in the changing room and go, lads, I'm not being funny.
Get out.
Surely you, you can just this once, put your phones down, leave your girlfriends and your wives for the night, and just go out and have a team night out, have a hotel away from home. They're so reluctant to do it now because
we used to have a countdown at the Christmas party, like 3 weeks till the Christmas party, and I was I couldn't sleep for 3 days beforehand. Yeah. It was bigger than Christmas Day,
and we all
get to sleep. No sleep.
And we all used to be like, listen, obviously it's night out, so we've got to win today just to make it the best.
If you were playing, like a couple of days beforehand, or you're playing on the Saturday, and your Christmas do was like the Sunday or something, you were like,
got to
win, lads. Come on, lads, get on this today. Yeah. Do this right. Because if this goes pear shaped, you know, especially my Peter Reid, bit volatile. You're not out tomorrow. He'd always reflect on that because he'd always be there.
He'd be the first in the bar,
but you'd always be careful.
And they might say, I'll chuck a few quid in the kitty for you if you win today.
I was really lucky like that. I had some good chairmen who would always throw a bit of money in, and it would like, and then a few of them would go, oh yeah, I think I can make it now. And you go, oh, flipping hell, tight ass.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, back in the day, everybody went out. Literally, we used to go from the YTs.
Well, you're an outsider, aren't you? Back then, if you didn't go out, you're an outsider.
I don't think anybody would not go. No. Even when we started saying all the foreign lads, they would all come. It was expected. It was part of the culture.
It's like pulling teeth now.
But more recently, the one time we do have it is when we was with Wales. That is one it'd be. It's almost like a bit of a throwback. We'd all go out, barring Bale, because I think that's the point. He can't go out. He doesn't drink anything, but he can't go out.
Not he don't want to.
He gets absolutely mauled. I remember we went to... when we got knocked out the Euros, we were staying in a place called Dinard, which is a little town in northern France. It's only a sleepy little village, but France were playing that evening in the second semi-final, so it was rammed with all the French fans. We'd been drinking all day at the hotel. So we had one more day before we were going to fly back to Cardiff. Gaz and a few others went to play golf, and he said he was going to meet us on the night out, so we've all gone out. We're all absolutely steaming. Gaz pulls up, walks out of the taxi, no word of lie, must be about 300 or 400 French people just ran at him straight away. Mm-hmm. He took one look, back in the taxi, back to the hotel, and we had like one of the best nights ever. It was incredible. And he's missed it. But so for Wales, Chris Coleman would make a big deal, like, you need to go.
He's friends with Peter Reid. I remember they used to go out. There was all that sort of old crew like that. Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
I remember there's two occasions where we stick out. We lost to Republic of Ireland, which means we missed out on a place in the playoffs of the World Cup, so we're all devastated. Got back to the hotel, he pulled Ashley Williams, said, right, make sure everyone's out tonight. We can't let this be too disappointing. He bought everyone a drink in the bar, everyone was together and went out, sort of guy was. And then the Euros, the group stage was 10 days. He says, lads, give me 10 days where you don't see your families, you don't have a drink. If we go further than the 10 days, you can enjoy yourselves. So we got through the group stage, and then after every single game then, it was just an absolute piss up. It was ridiculous. So who did we beat first? We beat Russia in the last game of the group. We're in Toulouse. We had a big barbecue the next day. Everyone was bladdered. Beat Northern Ireland in Paris. It was like a riot in the hotel.
But obviously enough time to recover and all of that.
Yeah, I always remember we were doing it, and it was done right, but we always had 5 or 6 days for a game.
It's done right. Yeah, it's not done unprofessionally. Yeah, it's done right. It's not the right environment.
Oh yeah,
everybody's protected. No one's getting hurt. It's all the lads together looking after each other. Then the next day you've got all the stories and talk about it,
and the recovery time,
people you haven't got on so well with, you know, suddenly then you're having a beer with and then it creates a great mentality there.
Well, that's the big thing,
see that
it?
With Wales at Euros, baby.
I always remember us looking at what we were doing, and you thought England couldn't do this, France couldn't do this, Portugal, no one could do this, but we were in this little bubble where if the Welsh fans, those videos were getting out of us in the hotel steaming, Joe Ledley of a chair putting up the roof and stuff like that.
Brilliant.
And they loved it, the Welsh fans did. But imagine if that was England. Harry Maguire putting a chair through the roof.
They did that dentist chair, didn't they, in 96, and just got absolutely hammered.
They got hammered. But then, fortunately, it's just if you win, is it? Because they won, and then it's hilarious.
Let's do it again.
And that's like the best stories ever, isn't it? Euro 96 and Gaz are doing the dentist chair.
And that's a good thing, isn't it? It's not like, oh, yeah, we're Wales, we've got through the group stages, now we're just happy to be here. You were doing those things. Actually, that probably played a part in your success.
Talk about team spirit.
But you say, you know, your teammates, you now get to know people, you start to trust each other.
How much are you mates with some of your teammates now? How much time do people spend with them? A little bit on Xbox when they're playing FIFA against them, but I don't know.
They
become your pals, wouldn't they? Like, you look after your mates a bit more. If on the pitch someone's having a go at your mate, you go across and help out a little bit.